So the difficulty is that the living entity wants to enjoy. And so they have the desires, but these desires aren't in connection with Krishna, not to please Krishna. Right? So then the difficulty comes is that he wants to enjoy. And so he thinks by his own endeavor he is creating that. But the problem comes is that he's not actually. The situations that he puts himself into, that's from previous work, but all that process is through the Lord's sanction, is carried out by the modes of nature. So now, the living entity expects that he's made the endeavor, he should get what he wants. So when he doesn't, then the tendency is to blame the Lord for it. Right? Because why? I'm doing good work, why aren't I getting my results? Right? But the problem is that it's all based on desire. So if the desire isn't actually proper, it can't give good result. Right? Because means there's a medium, right? So depending on the medium itself can give different results. Right? As we discussed before, you can use anything properly or improperly. The knife can cut the vegetables, the knife you can use to harm someone. Right? But is the medium at fault? No, it's the desire. So even if you're doing good, seemingly good work, if the mentality is not right, the results will not be good. Right? They can't be good. Does that make sense? So, in other words, the Lord is fulfilling your desire, but according to what you deserve. Right? So he's just arranging it. You want it, he arranges it. Right? You know, it's just like lunchtime, the servers are there, and you say, give more. And so they give more. Right? And now if that's too much for you, and because of that you have problems, you know, get a bad stomach, so many things, it takes so much time, you can't blame the server. Because you asked for it. Because they're only giving what you desire. Same time as according to what you deserve. Right? There's 20 people, there's only a little bit, so they'll give more, but accordingly there's other people who want, so you only get something. Right? Does that make sense? You're the last one there, there's a bucket, hey, they can pour it over your head if you want. You know, it's like, it's not a problem. Right? So, one must be very, very careful in this, because he can't take credit for the achievements because he's actually following a process that the Lord has given. At the same time, if he misuses that process, then he receives the bad results. Does that make sense? Right? So we may feel this is unfair, but what is fair? What should fair look like? Right? I do whatever I want and I always get a good result.
Yes?
Yes? Like that. I just feel like flying like a bird, so I jump off the roof and I should be able to fly, right? You know, like that. Does that make sense? You're not going to try that one. The leather dhoti? That one you might. Okay. I would suggest suede. So get better folds. The jiva must be a doer in a certain sense, right? Because we're discussing here is these five factors of action, right? The doer, the work, the situation, the endeavor, and fortune, right? So the doer is you know, what we're dealing with, because now it's knowledge of the three doers, the soul, the material nature, and the super soul. Right? Otherwise, the injunctions of the Shastra would have been without meaning. The Srimad Bhagavatam purport to 10.87.25 states. Right? You understand? Because if he's not a doer at all, then why would there be all these restrictions and rules for the jiva? Because he can make the choice. What's the choice? The choice is based on desire. So his doing is his desire. Right? So in that way, you're a doer, because that desire starts a chain of events. Yes?
So all these restrictions, so they're basically to control the desires, not the actions.
Yeah, it's more the desire. I mean, it's like if one doesn't understand desires and one's controlled by desires, how do you get at it? How do you get at the desire? You understand?
Through what the desire brings with it.
Yes, what the desire brings with it, or through the grosser elements that you're more aware of. Because you can see, okay, I do this activity, it'll get this bad reaction. I do this activity, it'll get a good reaction. So you can see that. But it still doesn't necessarily mean that your desire has changed. That's the problem with pious activities, is even though you do all the right work, it doesn't mean your desires are of any better quality. It should be by, because now to do a pious work, technically what does that mean? What kind of environment do you have to put yourself in? Like you're going to give in charity, what would you be doing? Right? Just go to that same roof and just take the money and just throw it free like a bird and let it flow wherever it will according to the destiny.
Find someone who needs it.
Okay, someone who needs it. And of those who need it, who would be the best to give it to?
Qualified.
Okay, and what? And of the qualified, what? Who are the best? Brahmanas, okay, and devotees, right? So Brahmins and devotees. So Brahmins and Vaishnavas, then if you associate with them, what might be the result?
You might get Krishna.
Yes, you might see that different desire, you know? And because of that, you know, things the way you wouldn't have looked at it. Just like yesterday I was mentioning something about how people are very worried because they want to see the situation not be bad. It should be good. It should be nice. One should be happy by the endeavor. And then the person's comment, you know, it wasn't, you know, pessimistic. It was just practical. He said, happiness is overrated. You know, so I thought that was very interesting because we always rate happiness very well. He said, happiness is overrated. You know, it's like, because the thing is, you don't have to be happy to be satisfied. You know what I'm saying? And that would be, you know, in other words, you want to be in a, the mind is peaceful and only from there can you be happy. So peaceful of the mind, satisfaction, these qualities are more important and that comes from just proper behavior, no matter what the situation is. So that, I thought that was very interesting observation. Okay. Right, so in other words, he has that choice, and in that choice he'll get association. That's the whole point of karma, is even for the karmis, that by performing the activities according to Shastra, all good activities, there must generally be priests involved. Right, Brahmins involved, qualified people involved. So because of that, then there'll be study of Shastra, hearing of Shastra, proper association. In that, then you may pick up this higher understanding. That's the real underlying, hidden purpose of it, right? That is given. But problem is you could also have materialistic Brahmins. So you may not pick up anything other than just more piety. Right? That was the problem with was it Maharaj Prachina Barhishat? Yeah, Maharaj Prachina Barhishat. Is that he only knew that there was karmakanda. So when Narad Muni came and told him that there's higher processes, he didn't know because all his Brahmins were karmakanda Brahmins. So because of this, he was a pious soul. He had done unlimited yajnas, and unlimited, you know, charity and good works. But the problem is, you know, it won't ultimately give him that benefit he's looking for, because at some point they run out, at some point you do something wrong, right? Nariga, it was said, he has done as much, you know, pious works as there are grains of sand on the beach, you know, that's unlimited. But he still ended up as a lizard, right? You know? So, because there was a mistake, right? So therefore, Jayamani's point, if you just only do pious activities, you only get good results. It's good in theory. You know, it's like the Mayavadi's stuff. But the problem is every action is covered by fault, so there's going to be a mistake somewhere. So it doesn't work. So only devotional service, that if it's done to please Krishna, even if there's a material mistake, that doesn't have an effect on the devotion. Right? Unless it's, you know, you're not sincerely endeavoring or like this, that's not an excuse. So Prabhupada says that this being, what is it called? means that you didn't know. You're trying, but you don't know. And so you could say that the results aren't coming right because of that. Though you're seemingly sincere. Naivety, yeah. But naivety is not an excuse. Because the point is, you're doing service for Krishna, we should educate ourselves. We should become aware. So in the beginning, one may not be, but that's not an excuse. You have to become aware. Okay, so now, Bhagavatam 10:87-25 states, although the soul is in truth both conscious and active, the proponents of Shankya philosophy wrongly separate these two functions of the living force. Atmani ye cha bidam, ascribing consciousness to the soul, purusha, and activity to material nature, prakriti. According to Shankya Karika 9-20, right? That's why, so this is very atheistic. Because here, notice, conscious and active. So they separate the two. Why shouldn't they be separated? What is the common category of consciousness and activity?
Soul.
The soul. But here they're saying, yes, it's the soul. But they're saying the soul and then the material energy. So what aspect of the soul, you know, represents consciousness and activity? Yeah, we're not impersonal, we're people. But then that will be, but why, what makes these two function together?
False ego.
False ego? Okay, chit, yes. You understand, the chit potency means knowledge and activity, right? Because it's in the position of Abhideya. So that would mean is that action is done with knowledge. So you can't separate the two, right? So that consciousness, knowledge, and activity, the three go together. So if you're conscious, then you can use your intelligence to properly perform the activity. If you're not conscious, it will be much harder. Right? So unless you're just conditioned-wise very intelligent, but even then, Maya can steal that intelligence, because she is more clever. Right? So one must remember, women are four times more clever than men. Right? So the jiva in the material world thinks they're a man, right? They think they're the purusha. So that means Maya, who's not in that consciousness, is going to be four times more clever. So no matter how clever you are, she's always going to win. You know, guarantee. It's that's like, you know how you say it? House always wins. Like that. It's just it's just the way it is. The statistics. Okay, so this is this is from the Shankya Karika, 19-20. Quote, thus, since the apparent differences between purushas are only superficial, being due to the various modes of nature that cover them, the purusha's true status is proven to be that of a witness, characterized by his separateness, his passive indifference, his status of being an observer, and his inactivity. Thus, by contact with the soul, the unconscious, subtle body seems to be conscious, while the soul appears to be the doer, although he is aloof from the activity of nature's modes. You understand what's going on here? Is that they're using, means, because remember, Shankya is one of the six philosophies. That means it's taking the verses of the Vedas, not something else, right? They're not taking Mad Magazine or something else. They're taking the verses of the Vedas, and then taking that, they're interpreting them in their own way. And because of that consistency of interpretation, right, that's called Shankya. Right? So you have a complete philosophy that you see every verse through that. Right? Most people, means in your modern scenario, you won't find a pure, you know, Shankarist or a pure, you know, how you say, Karmakandi or like this. They're always going to be mixed. They, you know, we'll see some parts this way, some parts that way. But the principles of it, the philosophy of it, are all, they're an eternal principles, right? They're eternal bogus philosophies, right? So every creation, then these come up and these people are given the opportunity to be the proponents of them. So here they're saying that the soul, because the soul is covered by the modes of nature, which we'll agree with, right? And so because of this, actually, it's the modes of nature that make the difference in the souls, Right? So in here they're correct in that the souls are non-different, in that they all have the same quality. Right? They're not. If we see differences in souls, that's seeing in the mode of passion. But when we see that all souls are the same, meaning the same quality of such, you know, of spirit, then that's seeing correctly. So they're using that aspect, right? So that aspect they bring out, and so therefore he's just a witness, because the body is dead matter, and it's only because association with the soul it seems to be, you know, active. But that's carried out by the modes of nature. So now what they're trying to say is that therefore the soul has nothing to do with it. He's just observing. So he's passive, yes.
When they use the term Purusha, they're talking about...
That means the jiva, yeah. Purusha is jiva, because every living entity in the material world thinks I'm the controller and enjoyer. So that's Purusha. That's enjoyer. Right? Because here's Purusha. So that's the mistake, because the jivas aren't Purusha. Krishna's Purusha. We're not. So as soon as we understand we're servant, everything starts to work. Problem is, if we're Purusha, then the problem is then everybody else thinks they're Purusha. You know what I'm saying? It's just like if you're trying to play a game and everybody wanted to hold the bat and hit the ball, then, you know, is it going to work? No. So that's the problem in the material world. That's why there has to be rules. Okay. You know, you want to bat. Okay, but, you know, there's a system. So you bat after he bats, and then somebody has to throw the ball to bat, right? So just as a, you know, a support of that, then you have to do. That's where, you know, the rules say, you know, you have to be submissive and this and that. That's only so that you can get control afterwards. You know what I'm saying? So these kind of things is there. Does that make sense? Yeah, so it's Purusha. So that way, then they'll always talk about it in that way. Why? Because are they going to surrender to God? No. Therefore, if he's left his Purusha as the controller and enjoyer, then it's a matter of situating himself in the real situation of Purusha. So in the material, you're not really the Purusha, because how do you enjoy the place? It doesn't seem to work quite right. So if you remove yourself from it, by liberate yourself from it, then you'll be the real Purusha. You understand what they're doing? So this is why it's important, because if I just read that and you didn't know that this kind of, it might sound like our philosophy, because it's extremely close, because it's using the same verses and it has a lot of it that's understood, but it's misapplying it afterwards, like we were saying before. The method may be correct, but it's misapplied. Does that make sense? Like Prabhupada says, up to liberation, what we say and what the impersonalists say is the same. You're going to get out of the material world through naishkarmya. But their point is they think the goal is getting out. Well, we just say that that's not the goal. That's just part of the process. Right? So Srila Vyasadeva refutes this idea in the section of Vedanta Sutra 2.3, 31 to 39. That begins, karta, shastrarta, vat. The jiva soul must be a performer of actions because the injunctions of scriptures must have some purpose. Acharya Baladev Vidyabhushan, in his Govinda Bhashya, explains, the jiva, not the modes of nature, is the doer. Right? Why? Because the injunction of scripture must have some purpose. Shastrarta, vat. For example, such scriptural injunctions as Svarga Kamo Yajeta, one who desires to attain to heaven should perform ritual sacrifice, and Atmanam Eva Loka Upasita, Brihadaranyaka Upanishad 1.4.15. One should worship with the aim of attaining the spiritual kingdom, are meaningful only if a conscious doer exists. If the modes of nature were the doer, these statements would serve no purpose. After all, scriptural injunctions engage the living entity in performing prescribed action by convincing him that he can act to bring about certain enjoyable results. Such a mentality cannot be aroused in the inert modes of nature. The jiva, right? You understand here? Right? So this is Vedanta in that. So it's not the modes of nature that are doing, because doer means that they are, as such, the ones inspired to perform the activity. So the modes of nature aren't inspired to perform the activity. This is our confusion when we come up with, is it free will or predestiny? Because if predestiny, then it's up to something else, what's going to happen to us. But the modes of nature are only carrying out what we desire. We desire it. The Lord sanctions it. The modes of nature carry it out. Right? So the jiva, by his desire, is putting into effect the modes of nature. Right? And then he gets the results. But because it all happens together, we will think, I'm the doer. But that's a mistake, because you're not actually doing those, because you're not those things. The soul is separate from that. We understand this fineness here is that, so the real doing is your desire. So you change the desire, you change the results of your activities. Does it make sense? So it's a very fine point. It's not just grossly this or that. As we can see here, is that when you get down to it, then there's going to be very, very subtle points. Right? Otherwise, why is it so difficult to deal with these philosophies? Right? You know, it's not some hippie that just came in because he just read something and thought it was cool, right? You know, so you say something and no. We're talking about people that are really using very fine intelligence here. Right? So this means a full study of this will be in the, what do you call it? This is verse 3, 4, 5, 6. The 7th, 8th, and 9th years of this 12-year cycle. Like that. But otherwise, a basic overview of this will be in the 3rd year. Like that. We'll get a good solid understanding of this. Like that. But not, it won't be every last little point that they have. That would be the 7th, 8th, and 9th. Okay. Thus, the jiva is thus a doer. Right? Otherwise, why does he get the reaction? The reaction should come in the modes of nature. They did it. You know what I'm saying? Isn't it? So that's the point. You know, it's just like, you know, your mailman came, he gave you the letter. You know, you open the letter and it's, you know, it's a Dear John letter. So then you go out, take a stick and start beating him, you know, because he did it. He brought the letter, right? You know, so it's, right? No? Okay, so that's the point, is because the jiva identifies that it's his. He desires it and he wants the result. Therefore, the reaction comes to him. He's the one that wanted it. Right? You know, you want something for lunch. You go into a restaurant, you make the order. Right? Then after some minutes, 20 minutes, you know, like that. Guess that's a joke, right? So then it comes in, is on the table there. Now, you can say, I ordered this, so it's mine. Right? But at the same time, did you buy the vegetables? Did you cut them? Did you prepare them? Did you serve it? No, you didn't do any of that. But because you ordered it, you desired it, and you claim it, therefore it's yours. Right? But in that, of course, there has to be some price has to be paid. Because you sat there and did nothing meant you had to do some other work, and then the results of that you're applying to this. Otherwise, you want to eat, then you have to get up and, you know, go into the kitchen and do all this stuff. Then you know, does that make sense? But so just because, so no one will disagree that lunch belongs to the person who ordered it. Right? They won't say, no, it belongs to the waiter because they brought it. You know? Does that make sense? It belongs to the hotel manager because, you know, he sanctioned it. Right? Does that make sense? Or it belongs to the menu because it was on the menu. Right? It belongs to the cook. He cooked it, you know. Does that make sense? So you could go on and on like this, but the main thing is that you desired it and you claim it. That's why there. So in this case, the soul is the doer, because Krishna says, you know, that the material world is maintained by the living entities. You know, we know Vishnu is the maintainer. So why would the jivas? Because of their desire, therefore it's being fulfilled. They don't desire. Where is the material world? The person becomes God conscious, desires nothing material. Where is the material existence for him? It's not there. Right? Does that make sense? So he's not maintaining the material existence, so it's not there. person with material desire is maintaining it, so therefore it's there for them. Does that make sense? The jiva is thus a doer. The sense of doership, however, is limited to the range of desire and endeavor. The soul is free to desire, but it's the Lord who sanctions and fulfills the desire by the agency of the material nature. Right? Okay. So desire and endeavor. So you desire, you know, a particular result and everything, but you also desire to make the endeavor. Right? So then the modes of nature then carry it out. Does that make sense? So, in other words, you have the desire, you make the endeavor, right? Now, what's desire based on? Why would desire arise?
From the identity.
From the identity, okay.
You have a need.
Okay.
You're conscious.
Okay.
The environment,
okay. So that means we've got two of them. Okay, and then? To achieve a goal, but how will we achieve the goal?
With the process.
Through the process. So we're convinced that the process will get us a goal that we would like. Right? And we can see that this environment is suitable for this process, and the individual, you know, as a potential doer, can be the one who can do that work in that environment and get that result. Right? Because all this is intellectual, right? So because of all that, then one is inspired. Then desire comes up. Right? Contemplating the desire, it will become an attachment, one will make the endeavor. Does that make sense? We see this process. So because this is all a discussion about the five immediate remote causes, right? The doer, the work, the situation, the endeavor, and the fortune. Okay. The result of understanding of this knowledge is described in verse 16. One who has full knowledge of his constitutional position sees his ignorance destroyed. As one sees the sun light up everything in the daytime. It's funny how even just the order of things you have to. You understand? You know, because another here is sunlight, you know, could have been the, how you say, you know, basically a noun, otherwise the sunlight, you know, then it turns into a, you know, verb. It's very far out. Huh? In other words, one who has received knowledge about the three doers and who understands his position of dependence on Paramatma is freed from ignorance. If such a person focuses his consciousness on Paramatma, knowing that he is the one who fulfills all desires and surrenders to him, he attains liberation. This is explained in the next section. Right? So is this all clear about how, in other words, there's the jiva, there's the paramatma, and then there's the modes of nature, the material energy. Right? So the living entity desires, the super soul then will sanction according to what you deserve, and that will be carried out by the modes of nature. Right? So the Lord doesn't get involved, he just sanctions because it's his potency. Right? Like that. So one understands this, the only one can see is that it's not just about us. We think we're the all in all, but it's actually we're the smaller one in this.
So if the jiva's desire is not fulfilled, is that because they're not sanctioned?
They're not so sanctioned, you don't deserve it.
They might still be endeavoring, but they're not being sanctioned.
Yes, it's not being sanctioned because you don't deserve. So that would mean then you have to be performing that activity. Right, because results come by proper performance of activity. You do the right activity that's proper, then you'll get the right result. So if you're not getting, either it means you're not doing the right activity, or you may be doing the right activity, but you haven't in the past. You know what I'm saying? So even though you're doing the right activity now, you still don't deserve it. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's like you've done something wrong, and then you see it's a mistake, and so now you're the nice guy, but still the reaction from your previous activity is still coming. You know what I'm saying? So like that. So, you know. Does that make sense?
Sometimes in a difficult situation, after being conscious, you say, oh God, what should I do?
Yes. Yeah.
But if you do that consciously, like before you do anything, you just say, oh, Paramatma, what do you want me to do? Is that a good meditation?
Yeah, why not? If you can always, the point, Bhaktivinoda, you know, the point is by hook or by crook, you want to be conscious of God. Whatever method you use, it doesn't matter as long as it happens. You know? So in other words, how, if that will work, you know, one has that, then that should be used, yes. The point is to be God conscious. The processes are ways by which you can, you know the Lord and please the Lord. Right? So you're making going through the process that pleases the Lord, because that's the processes He used. That's been sanctioned. The spiritual master is giving that. We're following that. And so that whole process of working under senior devotees to please the Lord, you know, in an environment that He would like to be involved in. So that's the thing. That's your pastimes, right? The Lord has His pastimes, and we are connected to the devotees in those pastimes. So we assist them in activities that they know please the Lord. Right? So that's basically what's coming here and formalized in the way the scripture, Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra are engaging us in those ways. Does that make sense? So then that just develops until, so name turns into form, into qualities, into pastimes. It's a natural progression, right? So that's the. Is that okay? Yeah. Verses 17-29. By applying this knowledge, one achieves liberation in the Supreme. Verses 17-19. Simply acquiring knowledge of the three doers is not enough. One should apply this knowledge for taking shelter of the Lord and fixing the consciousness on Him. Because, right? So we're saying, knowledge is sambandha gyan, but if you do nothing with it, there'll be no activity, no result. Results only come if there's activity. Activity is based on knowledge. So it means this knowledge is then, now you can do something proper. Does that make sense? That's why theory is important for proper action. Right? But only theory that doesn't apply, that's also useless. Right? So the two must go together. Knowledge and activity must go together. Right? And for the activity to actually give the proper result, there must be consciousness. Right? So when one's conscious of the knowledge and the activity, then it'll work. Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport to 5.2, therefore, jnana, or knowledge that one is not this material body but spirit soul, is not sufficient for liberation. One has to act in the status of spirit soul. Otherwise, there is no escape from material bondage. Action in Krishna consciousness is not, however, action on the fruit of platform. Activities performed in full knowledge strengthen one's advancement in real knowledge. Yeah. So here, he uses these terms, full knowledge and real knowledge, right? Important to note, right? So having that knowledge is not enough, because it's part of the whole overall process. The knowledge is there, then one can act. So having that full knowledge, that's important so that you can act. And only by acting, then one will advance in real knowledge. Right, because real knowledge is our relationship with the Lord. Right? That makes sense. Full knowledge means we know what's there. Real knowledge will mean it's realized.
Both would be sambandha
field? Yeah, both would be sambandha, but just one's more mature. Right? You have jnana and vijnana, so vijnana will be more mature. I wonder what I say. Yeah, realized. So when the When the knowledge becomes real, then it's realized, I guess. That would be the basic. So even it's there, though they've forgotten. Forgotten all these things. Verse 17 describes the process of surrender to the Supersoul. Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushan explains. The aspirant's intellect first becomes convinced of such qualities of Paramatma as a sense of justice, tadbuddhaya. Then their minds become absorbed in Paramatma's qualities, tadatmana. Paramatma becomes their only goal, tannishtha. They completely surrender to Paramatma, tad, paryaya, paryayanaha. They thus become cleansed of all misconceptions by knowledge of the Lord's good qualities like justice, jnana, niruduta, kalmasha. Having destroyed all of aversion to the Lord, these persons attain liberation. Right? Because we're dealing with aversion to the Lord. It may not be, how you say, direct, but the point is who's the controller and enjoyer? Right? So as long as we think we are, then what does that actually mean? Yeah, we're adverse to the Lord, because that's his position. Right? So we're not, you know, directly taking that. It's by habit and all those things. Let's say bad habit. So then we're used to doing things in a certain way, you know, for our own enjoyment and happiness. So as we become convinced that the Lord is the supreme controller and enjoyer, he is everything. If we please him, we, as part of that everything, will also be pleased. Then we can give up that anxiety, because we're thinking, I'll only be happy. Because how do you enjoy? Can you enjoy something you don't control? Let us say there's a samosa, and you don't have any control over it. Can you enjoy it? Right? You know, as you reach for the plate, it moves away. You know? So that was what I was thinking about. You know, sometimes you get these absurd kind of thoughts. You know, you have this bird and is flying after a bug, you know, like a moth or something. And, you know, as it goes to grab it, it flies away. So you can imagine, you know, samosa had wings and it would fly away. You'd have to run around after it, you know, sneak up behind it, you know, catch it. You know, it's like, you know, we have it pretty good, right? Food just sits there. It doesn't go anywhere. But for most living entities, their food doesn't just sit there. You know, it has a tendency to wander off. You know. So, the living entity wants to enjoy, so that means then they want to be the controller. Yes?
So, when people go to theme parks and do these rides and stuff, isn't that an element of losing control for enjoyment?
But you decide which ride you're going on, so you always feel... the point holds in that... Ultimately, you can only enjoy if there's that element of surrender. You know, I mean, I still have yet to be convinced that a roller coaster, there's any enjoyment to be had, but whatever it is.
I'm not saying there is.
Like that, you know, I mean, you know, it's like you gotta go there, you gotta pay money and all that. All you have to do is walk down a dark alley, you know, in some weird place in town, and you'll be scared out of your wits. So I mean, why that's not called happiness, you know, but getting in a roller coaster and the same thing, and that was fun. So whatever. You know, it's the fear element.
Enjoyment is the end of it.
When you get off.
You know that it's going to end, that's
you know it's going to, and so when it comes to the corner and it doesn't turn and it keeps going straight, you know it's going to end. So that's what the enjoyment is. I don't know if that happens anymore, but it used to happen before. That's why I was never very much interested in such things. Okay, so the point is we need to control to enjoy. But the point is the Lord's the supreme controller. So that makes him the supreme enjoyer. Right? So if we're in line with the supreme enjoyer, then we're going to enjoy, right? Otherwise the jiva on them zone, how much do you get from dead matter? You know, from we are the enjoyer ourselves, how much do you get? Very little. Because how big are we? So how much happiness is in 1/10,000th the tip of hair? How much can you stuff into that? Right? Not a whole lot. You know? Like that. So, but Krishna is unlimited. Does that make sense? So if you are sharing in his happiness, it's unlimited. So when we're convinced of this, then we can surrender, and then it's... Does that make sense? So the point is that without that surrender, you're not going to be happy. But here, you're choosing. Right? So therefore, desire is still left. But it's not a matter of control here. It's simply what is the desire. And according to that, Krishna reciprocates. Right? Mother Yashoda wants to feed Krishna. That's her desire. So Krishna reciprocates by eating. Right? But it's still for his pleasure rather than your own. So desire remains, right? Because desire is in the position of sambandha, so that's where your control, your security is. Right? So that still remains, but it's in its proper state of service, right? Of surrender. So one's position, one's identity is that of surrender, not as the controller, but as the controlled. Right? So control is still there, just you're being controlled, that's all. Does that make sense?
Sometimes Prabhupada mentions about living as being a subordinate controller.
Yes, subordinate controller.
So is there still, some aspect of
it? I mean, subordinate controller means that you... But what... Yes. It means you have two things. He's the subordinate controller, means as like in the last section, he's the doer. So that means he is a controller, but all he is having a desire. But he thinks he's doing the whole thing, but he's actually not. So you're putting into perspective how he is a subordinate controller. Because the living entity desires, and the Lord then sanctions, and then the whole material energy moves. So we're pretty small in all this. And the material energy is the shadow of his internal energy, which is very great. Right? And then he's the source of that. You know, so much, they're all much greater than us. You know, we're 1/10,000, the tip of the hair, material energy is 1/4 of the cosmic manifestation. So it kind of starts to put things into perspective like that. Though somehow or another, our math is not so good. You know, it's like, you know, this is actually what quantum should be for, is figuring this out, how small we are and how big everybody else is. Our quantumist didn't come today. He was here yesterday. Like that. He's done a whole thesis on showing through quantum physics, you know, the Lord and his pastimes and everything like that. You read his thing. It's all how you say, mathematical jargon and all that. But everything that's not a technical jargon is all Radha and Krishna. And it's very far out. So that's the one. The other is that's you know, the reality of what it is. And then that can either be used negatively to bind himself or positively to free himself. But the real subordinate controller means that they control Krishna through their affection. Right? Though he's the supreme, you know, controller, because it's about his pleasure. But they're the subordinate. So according to their desire, Krishna fulfills it. So if we define that fulfilling my desire is what makes me happy, if your desire is fulfilled to serve Krishna in a particular way, that would make you happy. You know what I'm saying? So it's just a matter of being convinced of this. Right? So then Baladev gives a progression. You know, first we see Super Soul, you know, is that he is controlling and sanctioning, so there's a sense of justice, is what's right and wrong. But it's based on the Super Soul, not on anything mundane. Right? That's very important. So here when it says justice, it means, you know, what the Lord says is correct, and what he says is not correct is injustice. So it brings our sense of justice, because if you say, I did the activity, the result is mine, on what body of knowledge, or let's say, yeah, would that be based?
Artha,
you know, which will have the element of justice in it, right? In other words, you're considering, I did the work, I get the result, that's just. I did the work, someone else got the result, that's not just, right? Does that make sense? You know, why you say, person worked very hard and then he got very little paid for it, and then someone else took that, paid very little, and then sold it for very expensive. Then we'll say it's exploited. Why? Because one did more work, one did less work. So why is he getting so much less? It's a sense of justice. So because of this, then this whole process of I work, I get a result has some meaning. Right? And as long as I get it, everything's fine. If someone else takes it, there must be a method I can get it back. Right? That's what justice is. It's basically, justice is an economic platform. That's why it's placed within in pranamoy, in artha. It's not on some other higher level. The rules of justice come from dharma, because there's a nature. You do the work, you get the result. You know, someone else can't take your work. You know, your results of your work, or your work to get the results. That's for you. So that's dharma. But the actual worrying about it, you know, as a level of consciousness, that's artha. That's lower than dharma. That's sub-religion. That's why then this mundane sense of justice is kicked out in the Bhagavatam. You have to have a proper sense of justice. So it's connected to super soul. It's connected to dharma. So otherwise it's yeah. Then the minds become absorbed in the qualities, right? Because if you have justice and there's all these rules, where do they come from? Why are they there? Because there's qualities, right? Because then the qualities are there, and how he's entered everything and why everything works the way it does. So for it to work that way means Krishna has to have a quality, right? Does that make sense? Then Paramatma becomes the goal, right? Because he's entered everything. He's the one that's making it work. He's the one that we're actually looking for, right? Paramatma is our actual goal, though we don't know it. Then he starts to become the goal, right? Because we start to see that, you know, it's the qualities that are what we're looking for. And those qualities are the Lord's qualities. So that's what we're looking at. But we start from justice, this right and wrong, I should do this, I shouldn't do this. Then, you know, what I should do and not do, that's based on qualities. Why I'm interested in it is qualities. Then those qualities, then those coming from the person. So then the person becomes the goal. Right? This is the step, how you start to move from that, you know, just how you say, impiety to piety, piety up to you know, the Brahman understanding, and the Brahman understanding then to he's the person, right? They completely surrender to the Lord, right? Because he's the goal. They thus become cleansed of all misconceptions by knowledge of the Lord's good qualities, like justice, right? So you're just starting with one quality. That's the thing. Any quality, if you focus on it, that can make you perfect, because all the qualities are the Lord's. So if you focus on the Lord, it'll work. Right? Does that make sense? So this way, one will move through this, because it's very important. Otherwise, one will get stuck on this Brahman platform, right? Seeing it's the Lord and how everything's controlled and all that. But the point is that it's the qualities of the Lord that make it work, that why it's something to be done. Something interesting, something why the Lord would be interested, even that we're dealing with a reflection. So it's the quality. Only when one surrenders to the Supersoul can one see all of the living beings in the same way the Supersoul sees them, with equal vision and without envy. Verse 18. Such a devotee is impartial to the mode of goodness, the Brahman and cow, the mode of passion, the elephant, and the mode of ignorance, the dog and the dog eater. Most of them are going in order down. So the end of the line is the dog eater. Srila Prabhupada describes his position in renunciation through wisdom. Quote, this is true equal vision in relation to the Supreme. The karma yogis perceive that all elements and objects in this world are materials for the Supreme Lord's worship, and that all living entities are eternal servitors of Lord Krishna. One attains the purest stage of equal vision when one ceases to take into consideration the outer covering of the soul, the body, but rather is established in the soul's innate nature of serving the Lord. In this stage, one engages all things in devotional service to the Supreme Lord by using them as ingredients for sacrifice to please Lord Vishnu. So renunciation through wisdom means this renunciation is happening because of knowledge, and this is the knowledge. Right, this knowledge in connection with the Lord. Okay. So, true ego vision is you see that everything is connected to the Lord and something to be used for the Lord's service. So that means all living entities in all situations, you see them in their connection to the Lord. So you're not seeing the covering. You're seeing what is the opportunity to engage. Right? Because if you're looking at the covering, not it means you look at the covering in connection to its ability to be engaged, but if you look at the covering, there's the element of, well, what can I get from this covering? Rather than if you look at it as an ingredient for the Lord's satisfaction. So whatever is in that covering that could be engaged in the Lord, Lord's service, in this situation, that's what should be done. Does this make sense? Yeah. Then it doesn't matter what is the covering. You can see the equal vision is all living entities can be engaged in the Lord's service. Right? All situations, all things in the world can be engaged in the Lord's service. But you have to see, you know, what is behind the soul and the Lord and his energies. You see that, then the coverings are only the medium for that service. Or that engagement, yes.
And then that would take the Madhyana level to discriminate in what to...
Yes. Well, that's why it's recommended. You know, one should, as quickly as possible, get to the Madhyama platform. Because a neophyte platform, too easily one's overwhelmed by one's own desires and attachments. So it's not a solid position. Right? So once you get to the Madhyama platform, because discrimination is very solid there, and that in that position, then one can see, you know, so much more easily what's right and what's wrong. Is that something? Or? Okay. Verse 19 describes the liberated soul who has achieved Paramatma realization. He has attained equanimity of mind, the sign of self-realization. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is faultless because he is without attraction or hatred. Similarly, when a living entity is without attraction or hatred, he also becomes faultless and qualified to enter into the spiritual sky. By fixing one's consciousness on the Supersoul or Krishna, one becomes peaceful amidst the threefold miseries because he sees them as Krishna's mercy. One who can see how Krishna reciprocates in this way becomes eligible for liberation. This is confirmed in Srimad Bhagavatam 10.14.8. My dear Lord, one who earnestly waits for you to bestow your causeless mercy upon him, all the while patiently suffering the reactions of his past misdeeds, and offering you respectful obeisances with his heart, words, and body, is surely eligible for liberation, for it has become his rightful claim. Right? So when you bring it into the personal element, then it becomes very nice. We can see everything's very wonderful. Problem is the personal has to be real personal, right? Not the mundane concept of personal. Because the mundane concept is what you think is the person and you think is the relation is not. Right? The real person is the soul and the super soul. The relationship with him, that's real personal. Does that make sense? Verses 20 to 26. In this section, the Lord describes the symptoms of one who has achieved liberation by fixing his consciousness on the Supreme. The first symptom is that he is not bewildered by the false identification of the body with his true self. He knows perfectly well he is not the body, but is the fragmental portion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Such a person does not rejoice in achieving something, nor lament in losing anything that is related to the body. By enjoying the spiritual pleasure that comes from within in loving service to Krishna, he is always in trance and is never attached to material sense pleasures. Thus, this is so because he knows that material and sense enjoyment is temporary and is a source of future miseries. He does not delight in them because he has attained a higher taste. Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport to verse 21, Sri Yamunacharya, a great devotee in Krishna consciousness, said, Quote, since I have been engaged in the transcendental loving service of Krishna, realizing ever new pleasure in him, whenever I think of sex pleasure, I spit at the thought, and my lips curl with distaste. A person in Brahma Yoga, or Krishna consciousness, is so absorbed in the loving service of the Lord that he loses his taste for material sense pleasure altogether. The highest pleasure in terms of matter is sex pleasure. The whole world is moving under its spell, and a materialist cannot work at all without this motivation. But a person engaged in Krishna consciousness can work with greater vigor without sex pleasure, which he avoids. That is the test in spiritual realization. Spiritual realization and sex pleasure go ill together. A Krishna conscious person is not attracted to any kind of sense pleasure due to his being a liberated soul. Thus, the self-realized devotee does not depend upon external sense pleasure, but finds his happiness inside. Unless one is able to relish happiness from within, how can one retire from the external engagements meant for deriving superficial happiness? A liberated person enjoys happiness by factual experience. He can, therefore, sit silently at any place and enjoy the activities of life from within. Such a liberated person no longer desires external material happiness. This stage is called Brahma-Bhuta, Srimad Bhagavatam 4.30.20, attaining which one is assured of going back home, back to Godhead, Bhagavad Gita 5.24 purport. So one sees that there is nothing to be gained from the material because one is seeing what is gained from the spiritual. So we're tasting the higher taste, the lower can be given up. Otherwise, if one is materially inclined, one's going to be driven by material sense gratification. Right? That's the drive. So one has to try to be happy, right? The soul's nature is to be happy. But he falsely thinks it can be gained through interaction with material energy. So this has to be seen as that's not going to happen. It doesn't happen. Right? By absorbing oneself in Krishna consciousness, one develops that taste that the other has no more interest anymore. Because otherwise you can analyze, and that will help, right? And if it's something within one's duty, one engages it, right? But ultimately, it's got to be that there is a higher taste. Because as we said, liberation isn't a permanent situation unless one is in connection with a relationship with Krishna. Does that make sense? So one can come to that platform and slide back from it. Because that's the nature of you know, these positions, because it's only sat, right? So where is chit and ananda, right? So you want to be happy, you're conscious, you know, so there's conscious of things that could make you happy, but, you know, so it's not going to work. But when it's in relation to Krishna, he is sat, chit, ananda. Therefore, everything is complete. Right? He's complete. Yes?
What does it mean to enjoy the activities of life from within?
To enjoy the activities of life from within means that one can see the Lord in everything and everywhere. So it's you know, one can chant the holy name. One can just observe what's going on. One can see so many things. You know, it's like, Prabhupada seeing the pigeons. And the pigeons, the male pigeons, you know, comes up and, you know, does his whole presentation of how he is so special and so attractive and everything, and the lady pigeon just completely ignores him and flies off. So then Prabhupada laughs and he says, even in the lower species, the principle of the female playing hard to get is there. But where is that coming from? That's coming from the people, because he said even in the lower species. And where does it come in the people? That comes from the origin. Right? So that means you see that in Krishna's pastimes with the gopis. You understand? So he's seeing this life everywhere. Even he's just seeing some pigeons. He can see the original pastimes there. You know, still just something is filtering through. So, does that make sense? So. Yes. Yes. What means when we say liberation, liberation, moksha, right? But the point is the devotee, so moksha just means you're not entangled in the material world. That simply is what it means. But Brahma-bhuta means you're liberated, or it's moksha, but in relationship to the Lord. So it's positive. So Brahma-bhuta can, from that platform, you can get to the platform of prema. But from liberation, moksha, that's not going to happen. How to, means know that it's there, right? You don't get anywhere unless you're aware of it. So, in other words, don't be satisfied to be you know, materially distracted in one's devotional service and figure that that's a very comfortable and very fine position, like that. Know that one has to be enthusiastic, perform bhaja. In other words, what's the difference between the neophyte and the madhyama? It's the matter of bhajana kriya. So when that bhajana kriya is fixed, that's nishta. Then that's the beginning of the madhyama platform. And when it's anishta, then that's neophyte. Does that make sense? So where it's stable, that's nishta. Where it's unstable, then that's neophyte. So in other words, we want to make our devotional service stable. So that becomes by having that faith, associating with devotees, practicing the process, and being aware of, you know, what we shouldn't be doing. You know, what's getting in the way of success. Then one becomes fixed. Right? But ultimately, all that has to be for the purpose of pleasing the Lord. Because that's the long-term drive. Otherwise, if you only see from one sentence to the next, you know, that's not enough. You see the whole process, developing love for Krishna, then that will be more dynamic. Okay.
Yes. In regards to this, is it possible that whilst on the neophyte platform, one's activities of devotional service can be fixed?
One's activities may be fixed, but the consciousness may not be. Yeah, but so here you're trying to bring the two together, right? Because, as you said, conscious knowledge and activities are one category, right? That's your summit potency. So when those are together, aligned, then it's going to be much better, right? Because otherwise, then you may be performing the right activities, but consciousness is not right, right? Does that make sense? So that's why you'll find sometimes someone may be very expert at the practice of Krishna consciousness, the form of it, but the consciousness may or may not be so good. You know, they may not be so good at associating with other devotees. Because they just see the other devotees through the external. They're doing it, they're nice, they're not doing it, they're not nice. So they can't actually see the soul. So, though it's better to be situated that you're steady in the activity than not, but still there's more to go. They have to then work on the consciousness. Does that make sense? Otherwise they're always criticizing, oh, they're not doing. You know, it's like, you understand? And then from that, then they'll develop, you know, those bad qualities. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So what you're mentioning about seeing the final goal to have the drive is very important, because otherwise you can get distracted and something goes wrong, you just don't know where to go finally. And then
yes. Well, it's just like if you're properly performing Abhideya, right, that means with knowledge, you're conscious of the present. But how do you know the present's going correct? Because you see the goal. Is it moving towards the goal or away from the goal? So that's the dealing in, you know, so that, you know, does that make sense? So, yeah. A self-realized soul is able to bridle the urges of the senses, verse 23. The senses will continue to push us till the time of death. But it's the duty of the transcendentalist to try strenuously to control them, right? So it's not that when you get older, then all that will go away. No, because the point is what drives the senses? What?
Sense objects?
The mind, right? Yeah, you understand? So the mind. So does the mind go away? No, the senses go away, but the mind doesn't really go away. Yeah, okay, it depends on how you're looking at it, but point is if the mind is there, then that means desire is there. Because that's where desire happens. Accepting and rejecting is the desire, it's the mind. Right? So it's not going to go away. Right? Because does the soul ever feel that they're old?
No.
It means whatever you are sitting here now, when you were a teenager, it was the same feeling. Right? Maybe there may be more energy, more this and that, but the sense of identity is the same. So, you know, when you're 90 years old, still it's the same identity. Right? Just remembering a funny comment Friedrich Undermarsch mentioned about, you know, everyone's looking at this little kid, you know, a little baby, and, oh, so cute, and this and that. He says, but I'm seeing it, you know, that just a few days ago he was a 90-year-old man. You know, nothing so cute about that. So it's just very, very, very clever, right? Okay, so that means one has to make the endeavor to control them. If one doesn't make the endeavor, it's not going to happen. Right? Because it's by desire. You don't desire, there's no result. You don't desire, it won't happen. So basically what we're trying to do is ultimately, the desire is to be, to just be Krishna conscious, to please Krishna. Right? So when that desire matures, then one's Krishna conscious. But one has to desire it. If one doesn't desire it, why will it happen? Why should it happen? Srila Prabhupada writes, there are the forces of talk, forces of anger, forces of mind, forces of the stomach, forces of the genitals, and forces of the tongue. One who is able to control the forces of all these different senses and the mind is called Goswami, or Swami. Such Goswamis live strictly controlled lives and forego altogether the forces of the senses. Bhagavad Gita 5.23 purport. So in other words, as we discussed before, Krishna says it's through the consciousness. Then with that intelligence, one can therefore control the senses. Right? But it's not just a matter of just not engaging them. One has to have a better engagement. Right? The mind needs a better engagement. You're tasting something higher, you can give us something lower. In other words, you're taking it, and we can say there's two forms of this. Right? Or you can even say three forms of this, but... Yeah, no, I'd say two. That you're going to have an activity that's not engaged in Krishna's service. Right? Now there's attachment for it. So by engaging in Krishna's service, then that taste of it being engaged in Krishna's service is a higher taste than not engaged in Krishna's service. Right? So the activity doesn't change. But there's also the element that by tasting Krishna consciousness, then the activity, one may give up that attachment. And if it's not important for you to be involved in that, then you could give that up for doing something else. You know, instead of playing a video game, you change some japa or something, or read Bhagavatam. Does that make sense? So it means, in other words, lower activities may be given up for higher ones. Or the lower activity changes from lower to improved by being connected to Krishna. Does that make sense? In other words, we're going from... means indirect activities can go by indirect and illusory to indirect being service to Krishna. And then indirect can be given up for direct. Does that make sense? No? Do you understand direct? Indirect means those things that aren't the direct services to Krishna, like chanting, hearing Bhagavatam, like this, serving, preaching. Indirect will be those little things in your life that you need to connect to Krishna through your through your duties. Right? So that can either be you're performing the duty improperly in your own way, so it's an impious activity, or you're performing it properly, it's a pious activity, or you can take that and connect it to Krishna. Right? It's service to Krishna, but it's still all indirect. So you can go through these stages of bringing the indirect to a higher platform, but then there's also the element of giving up the indirect for the direct. Does that make sense? Yes.
Well, you gave the example of instead of playing video games, you might...
Yeah, I figured that would happen as soon as I said that. That's why it's always better to stick to the Shastric ones. You don't get... There's no clinkers, you know, no slag, you know. Yes.
Is there a way to...
Engage the video games. Okay. Why is the video game important? What do you get from the video game?
Some experience.
Experience. What does that mean? What experience?
Well,
You built a city that's not there. You got through the Chernobyl ruins and killed off everybody and got, you know, what Professor, you know, Schlebubblewitz had and brought it back, and therefore you moved to the next level. So, you know, you figured out the difference between the front and the back of an AK-47. What do you mean, experience? What is that experience?
Like that, like you said.
Like that. And of what benefit? And so why do you want that experience? What drives you to go through that experience? You know, you could also go out and, you know, roll on the road from here to the temple. It would be an experience, you know. Or, you know, but that's smooth. You really want an experience, go through the just plowed field, you know, then that'll give you more of an experience. So, you know, why is that, you know? Pour a bottle of orange juice over your head and go sit next to a cow, or you know, it's all kinds of experiences you could have.
Well,
you know what I'm saying? What is that? What drives you for the experience?
Some desire you have to do something.
Some desire to do something. You could pick your nose. You might get some benefit.
It's not something.
Deep nasal exploratory, you know, endeavor. You know what I'm saying? You might. You know, science, you might discover something, you know.
I'd say, like, the example of, you know, you have a desire to create a city.
Create a city, yeah, okay, but that's a lot different from the guys with all the guns and bombs, or, you know, a sword and a dragon and the princess in the tower, you know.
Desire to be a hero.
Yeah, desire to be a hero there, you know. So the point is it's there's different reasons why someone's engaged. You know, say, well, it means... So why are you building a city? What do you plan to do in the future with that? You understand? So it's not thought out. So that means there's no connection at all. The point is why are you doing that? You know, there's a kid, when he grows up, he wants to be a politician and run the city. So therefore, for him, SimCity may have some meaning. Because it gets him aware of that. But at some point, it's not going to be enough. He's going to have to associate with those who do that. You know, so therefore he'll naturally give up and move. So the point is if you have a higher goal, then you can move through that. But you don't even know why you're doing it. You know, so unless you can identify the quality of Krishna that you're looking for, then you can't even see what's the connection. Because the point is, it's not the game. The game is just a medium for that quality. Right? You know, and they have some demoniac scientist that's figured out, you know, how to make it so it gets, so what are those, endorphins or something? There's some other things, some chemicals, and hormones that get going so that you become attached to it.
Yeah. All right, so get in your line.
Can if you can do that. I'm saying if that's your nature to do that, you have to engage. I mean, if you are a video game programmer, and so you want to engage that in Krishna service, then here's some way to do it. But you know what I'm saying? But that's service for you. But for the others, then you have to see whether it's going to be service or not. You know, how far are you going to take them? Because then there's always the thing is, why does it become popular? Generally because of its mundaneness. You know. But in other words, you'd have to be very clever. In other words, you could create the whole world, but you have to... you'd have to keep the ultimate goal in mind. Now, whether they would agree to that or not, you know what I'm saying? But generally, without knowing it, their people aren't that clever. You know what I'm saying? You know, Tolkien was clever. You know, what is that? The guy with the Star Wars, he was clever. They create a whole world. and then people become absorbed. So whatever is their lifestyle, their goals, their philosophy, you know, the supreme, everything in there, then you buy because it's complete. But that means, how did they think of all that? You know, so they work at it. Avatar, they have the language that those, what is it, Navis are speaking. They have a 1,000-word language for it. You know, so they worked out all the words that they would ever need to use in any of their movies, right? Because they're playing a sequel, of course. So that's a lot of thought. That means they had to sit down with linguists and this and that and work this whole thing out. You know what I'm saying? So they create all this. So then, we'll make a game. So, but what does that mean? What does that mean? What are you dealing with? So what angle are you going to take? You know, the karma, the hierarchy in the universe, the situation. What are you going to take? You know, how are you going to do it? But the point is then ultimately, what are you going to do about the Supreme? Because if there's no Supreme, because I mean, guy goes, you go to the, you get to the 24th level and you save the princess. But the point is saving the princess is considered a good thing. You know, it has that romantic element of it. You know, so there's some idyllic aspect. You know, if it was like, you get to the 24th level and then you walk in there and, you know, there's a box of Cheerios. Do you think anyone's going to continue playing the game? You understand? No, they're not going to play. Because what's the goal? What's the supreme? What's the good that's been done? So there has to be a supreme, there has to be good. Good work. So then what is that? Right? Even these other things, is you have to go in and save the weirdo scientists from all these other weirdos because they want what he has but for a bad purpose, but you're getting it for a good purpose. Like that, you know. So you know what I'm saying? So it's still the same thing. It's still good cause and there's some supreme. Though they drop it down lower and lower and lower. You know what I'm saying?
And for the children, we feel that it makes such a big disservice for them. They just can't really study.
Yeah, no, they can't do anything. No, and so unless the guy's so sharp that, you know, in the future he can become a, you know, how you say, one of these, what do you call them, you know, F-18, you know, fighter pilot, you know, guys like that, you know, so they just, everything's just a video game for him because that's all that's going on. They have this helmet. You don't actually see what's there. It's all in the helmet, you know, and so just where you look, things work. You know, so then, you know, that may be, but how many of them are there, right, you know? You know, I think, U.S. Army, I think, has like the Air Navy has like 300 and some odd. And, you know, so that means out of 300 million Americans, you know, only 300 people can do that. So it's not necessarily the most efficient. So what are the others doing with it? You know, maybe they're getting distracted. You know what I'm saying? So you have to see the practical. But generally, then they have that kind of a goal. You know what I'm saying? Because you don't get to that point by the time you're, you know, 19, 20, 21, unless you had the idea of earlier. You know, most people, they get to university, don't know what they'll major in. Then even they may pick the major and they finish, they don't know what they'll do with it afterwards. You know what I'm saying? So it's probably a lot of them playing these games, and so where are they getting? What are they doing? You know, it takes up some time. So you have to see, what is the point? And Krishna says recreation has to be balanced. So is it balanced? You know, kid playing the game so much he starves to death. That's not exactly balanced. You know, like that. He doesn't do his homework. He doesn't do his work around the house. Doesn't interact with anybody else in the family. Right, you know, doesn't develop his own, you know, as a person, that's not balanced. So there's something wrong here. You know what I'm saying? So even if you're saying, oh, well, recreation is important, but it's balanced.
And there are much more natural forms, right?
Yeah, it's called going out into the out there and kids pick up sticks and rocks and stuff, and they can create the world. See, thing is if you don't create it for them, they'll create it themselves. You create it for them, then they can only do that much. They're dependent upon you, which is, of course, good business, you know, like that. So ultimately, you have to see, why is that video game good? They just really felt that they wanted to give the kids something to do. So that's why they made it, you know. No, it's all business. If it doesn't sell, they don't sell it. So it's just tricks. You understand? So in other words, there's a lot to think about there. It's not just a matter of, well, yeah, we can do it for Krishna. But then, how are you going to do it for Krishna? That's the point. We've discussed all this. So how are you going to do that for Krishna? So in theory, yes, you can do it. But are you going to be able to do it? And if you do, are you going to go through this level of that we've mentioned before? Baladeva Vibhushan says about dealing with the Paramatma. You know, you see that sense of justice, you know. Yes, the scientists should not end up with the bad guys. You know, so like this is you're going to bring through and then see is that, well, actually what I'm looking for here is, you know, some particular quality. And that's coming from the super soul. So therefore, the super soul is actually the person I should be involved in. So, you know, how would I best serve the super soul? And so there's a good chance the video game isn't part of it. You know, if your father's a high court judge and you're getting, you know, 4-point average and that, then okay, maybe you will be the mayor. Then go ahead, play your Sin City. You know, but if he's not, then maybe it's just something to do until you get bored of that and then you get the Sin City, you know, video game, you know. Yes, you were saying?
No.
No, you don't? Okay. Okay, you understand? So it has something thoughtful. Otherwise, yes, intellectually it's there, but the problem is you have to apply it. But as I said it, I thought, this is going to come up. Yes?
The point you made about seeing the actual quality of Krishna that you see in that, I was asking my husband, I really like cricket. And the morning of the before the test match begins, and it's all the pitch's green, and it's all like siding. And I said, how can I see Krishna in that? And we'll kind of work out what it was. And it was probably the newness and the freshness and
yeah, kind of the sense of adventure. You know, the excitement, that's what one's looking for. But that could come in any medium. So it just happens to be due to our conditioning, we see that in that medium. Someone else just looks at it and go, well, what's this empty stadium? This is boring. You know, like that. You know what I'm saying? And so, you know, it's just like you have a hobo, you know, a pile of garbage. Now that's exciting. You know, that's new. It's fresh. It's fresh garbage, you know. You know, so, you know what I'm saying? So it's simply conditioning. Right? New opportunities. Right? Anything's possible.
Right?
Yeah, I mean, a bank robber's going to drop their bundle in there, and they're going to come back later to pick it up. But I get it now. Hey, you know, so like that. So that's why, as you look for that, and then understand as that quality is actually in the Lord. And then how that brings that up, but then at some point it has to be dynamically able to be engaged. Because it has to be able to go through. And that it's actually everybody on that playing field, they're all pure spirit souls. And it's only by the conditioning that someone's a good batter and someone's a good bowler and, you know, like this. And so all these different things then start to happen. You know, and then after that, then one could come to, how you say, you know, according to some opinions, then one could come to a higher level of, you know, giving up the lower for a higher. You know, then you could start, go for AFL. Like that, you know. So. You know, like that.
Sorry. Huh? Higher level.
Not a higher level. Okay, so that. Depends on who you talk to, you know. I've seen some Australians, they're very adamant about this, you know. Huh?
Down in Melbourne.
Yeah, down in Melbourne. Yeah, like that. Even some in Sydney, you know.
Crickets for the summer, footballs for the winter. So it's all
Okay. So it's a balanced, you know. Yeah. Sukaduke, some kripa, you see. You know, the different, according to the seasons as they change. Okay. That could work. A self-realized person is beyond the dualities that arise from doubt, because he sees everyone as part and parcel of Krishna. His Krishna conscious activities bring welfare to all living beings. Okay. One's the dualities that come from doubt, because if there's doubt, then you'll see that there's two things. If there's no doubt, it's one thing. Maybe two various aspects, but it's one thing. Like when you see a car, is it one thing? But there's wheels, you know, there's the engine, you know, there's the, you know, the seats, you know, very different things.
The status of it.
Huh? The status of it, yeah. There's all many things, color, you know, things like that. So all these things together, so you see it as one thing. So, because there's no doubt, you have no doubt that Bentley is good, right? You know, like that. So, you know what I'm saying? So, the one is how you say? So there's no dualities. So the point is when you see everyone is part and parcel of Krishna, right? There is no dualities there. Then you'll be able to work for everyone's benefit, because no matter who they are, you'll be able to, you know, if it's possible. Whatever way you could engage them in Krishna's service, you'll do it. Right? They're adamant not to be. That's another thing, but you know, there's always prasad. Right. Yes.
Does this word dualities necessarily mean you only see two things, or it means two or more things that you see?
Duality means is good, bad, hot, cold.
Okay.
Because you'll see them as different rather than one thing. Right? Yes.
How would colors be connected to this? I mean, is that something we place value on ourselves, and so we think, okay, yellow is nice and blue is not so nice, and then it's back to dualities? Or?
Yeah, because the point is why is yellow nice? Why is blue nice? You have a reason?
It might be cool to dive into a pool that's very nice and light blue and stuff like that. So connected to experience.
So you wouldn't like a yellow pool?
Not really. No.
Not really. No. Too bright. Huh?
Yeah, gives bad association. Different liquid.
Okay.
I would prefer blue.
You would prefer blue. Okay. But then, why blue? Of the sea, okay, because water's blue. Right? If water was green, you probably wouldn't mind a green pool, right? You know, it's like that. You know, it's, does that make sense? So it'll go back to something that's come from the Lord. So some way or another, you find some way to connect it. You know, it's blue because of the ocean. Krishna's the ocean, so therefore, you know. In other words, these are the things. They're very simple, but the point is it has to be constant. Not, okay, I worked that out, now it's done, and I never think about it again. So I swim in my pool all day. You know, no, this has to constantly be there. If it's constantly there, then one will be progressing. If it's not, then one won't be. That makes sense. Besides, Krishna's blue. Right. And Krishna's the ocean, and the ocean's blue, so hey, it works out.
Maharaj, since you touched, why is Krishna blue?
If you take everything and put it all together, what color does it go?
White.
That's light. That's energy. If you have substance,
black.
It goes black. If you take all energy and put it together, it goes white. So you have the supreme energy and the supreme energetic. because Prabhupada, I think Prabhupada mentions, because he is rasa, he's all the sum total of all rasas, so therefore that's why he's black. Okay. By acting only for the satisfaction of Krishna, he is freed from anger and material desires. Right. So it means you act only for Krishna, then you don't have a result that you want for yourself, so you're not going to get frustrated, so therefore you're not going to get angry. Or you can say, no, but I'm doing it for Krishna, but it's not working, so I'm getting frustrated. But that's because you feel I'm the controller, I'm the doer, so therefore, so, no, I simply, as an instrument, try to take part in this, and as the results come, then it progresses. If it doesn't, I keep working until I find it. Right? Otherwise, we'll think I'm the doer, we get frustrated and angry there. Like that, so. He is self-realized, self-disciplined, and is constantly endeavoring for liberation. So here, there's constantly endeavoring. Right? Self-realized, self-disciplined. So he knows he's the soul. Self-disciplined, so therefore, with this knowledge of the soul, therefore he keeps himself properly engaged. Middle of 58. Okay, constantly endeavor for liberation. He's sure to achieve liberation in Krishna because he's always trying for that. He's always seeing everything in connection to Krishna, and he's always trying to be engaged in Krishna's service. So therefore, he'll be liberated in the Supreme in connection to Krishna. We'll end here. Okay. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Janitai Gaura Premanandi. Okay, tomorrow, Friday, and Monday, then we won't be running this topic. So because I won't be here, so we'll run the Nectar Devotion and Upadeshamrita now during this time. You know, that way then the rest of the day is free, so it's a bit easier like that. So tomorrow and Monday the classes will be there, but we'll move the Nectar Devotion, the Upadeshamrita, down to the 7:20 to 9:20.